If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, a very good welcome. It's a very good day there, but of course, there are 24 hours in a day. Welcome to the latest adventure, the latest chapter of Life on Planet Porky with, of course, myself, the Porkmeister, and the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Ms. Jones, how are you this fine day?
Cooking, Michael. Plenty going on. Is this weather ever going to wake up, though?
Well, it's the strangest weather I've ever come across. I've been out early, you know, the last few days as I do, and it started to rain. So I've had to sort of go home, literally, because the rain's too hard. You know what I mean? Because when I'm out early mornings, I'm not really dressed for hiking. You know, I've probably got a pair of shorts on or something, off to get the croissants or the papers or something like that. But then,
well, there's a sight for sore eyes. Mike well, Carrier, a pair of shorts.
Yeah, well, indeed, absolutely. And deck shoes, you know.
And you got any wellies?
Not wellies. No. I draw a line at wellies. And then you kind of get home and you think, oh, what a wuss I was. Look, it stopped raining. And there's brilliant sunshine. Then you prepare to get out again. And I'm not joking. It's torrential, almost hailstones. I'm absolutely perplexed and amazed by the weather in this country. But I love it because I love weather. And I wouldn't want to, you know, no, really, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. I don't understand how people can live like you did sometimes in California for months and months on end. And all you do is see the sun come up in the morning and it stays there all day and the sun goes down at night. I mean, isn't that boring?
It is a bit. I like a temperate climate such as what we have here in the UK. I think all the climate change deniers are wearing a smile on the other side of their face right now, because clearly we are going through climate change. This is very unusual weather for the UK at this time of year to have such heavy rain, even hailstones, snow in some parts of the country. And then you have this sort of extreme sunshine and high temperatures within hours. So we're having all the weather ranges in the space of one day. It is very unusual. There's obviously climate change, and we do clearly need to do something about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm not a climate change denier. I'm a why is the climate changing individual, and I want a lot more research done in it. I don't think it's good enough to say, well, it's all human beings. It's not all human beings. It's cyclical. I've said before, I think, on this very podcast, that when the Romans were here and building Hadrian's Wall, there's evidence that there were vineyards in Northumberland because it was a much, much hotter country in those days than it is now. It goes round. Sunspots come and go. Sunspots are like the sort of sunglasses of the atmosphere on the earth, you know, between the sun and the earth, which filter out hot rays and all that kind of stuff. And they're just out of sync at the moment. But anyway, look, what do I know about it? Ms. Jones, as I was just preparing to get on air with you for this this podcast, I came across the fact that Cher is 75 today. She's got great longevity, that woman, hasn't she? She seems to have been around for all of my life since I was a real little kid watching Sonny and Cher on Top of the Pops. I got you, babe.
Yes, very good. She is extraordinary. She does appear to have been around since we were tiny children.
Yeah.
She's had a renaissance of late in the Mamma Mia return. Was it called Mamma Mia 2, something like that?
Yeah.
She plays Meryl Streep's dad in the second film, who the film is really about, but Cher plays her mother. So she's grandmother to the main character.
Yeah.
And she's remarkable in that. I know lots of people who can't stand Mamma Mia, the whole concept, the whole idea of that film, but they absolutely went to see it because of Cher. I was very disappointed because a couple of years ago in America, they created a Cher musical. And I was really looking forward to seeing that in London. But it was cancelled after a few weeks. It didn't do very well. I have no idea why, because I heard on Elaine Page's radio show on a Sunday some tracks from the musicals sung by the actress playing Cher.
Yeah.
And honestly, you couldn't tell the difference. It was amazing. So it's a real shame that didn't happen here. But no, I think she's an icon, isn't she?
Yeah, she's remarkable. She was also, I think she's also a great actress. She was in a film where she played a delinquent mother to a younger girl. And was the title song the Choo Choo song or something? Do you remember?
Oh, Shoop Shoop Shoop.
Yeah, it's the Shoop Shoop, Shoop Shoop song. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Does he love me? I want to know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I can't sing. I obviously can't sing.
That's fairly obvious.
But it was that song.
Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. Leave the singing to me on these podcasts, Miss Jones.
Right,
I think you find that the audience will probably agree with that one. But no, I think she's a great actress as well. And it's hard to believe, isn't it, that she came to prominence, Sonny and Cher. I got you, babe. He killed himself, didn't he, on a pair of skis and ran into a tree, I think, didn't he?
I think so. Wasn't he governor of California
or something? No, he wasn't governor of California. He was like Clint Eastwood. He was the mayor of, like, you know, a popular sort of town there, wasn't he? Clint Eastwood was mayor of Monterey, I think, wasn't he?
Before my time, of course.
Yeah, way before your time. And Bono, what's his name, Bono? Yeah, it was Sonny Bono, wasn't it? Yeah.
Sonny Bono, yeah.
Yeah, he was mayor of London. But you're absolutely right. He did advance a bit in politics and get into the sort of the mix for, you know, being a senator and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And anyway, there we are.
He was a funny little thing as well, wasn't he? Wouldn't sort of put them together, but they were married at one time.
Yeah. Yeah, very odd. I mean, they were just a novelty of the 60s, weren't they, if you know what I mean? I know you're far too young, Miss Jones, to remember the 60s, but, you know, weirdos and crackheads and people were floating around and they just fitted in. The only thing I remember about Sonny Bono is he used to wear ridiculously, lavishly striped trousers, you know, which made him look like he was walking around in pyjamas, because that's what people did in those days.
Yeah, they did. And they do now, I suppose. Yeah, we have our share of weirdos and eccentrics now, don't we?
Yeah, we do. You're right.
Nobody wants to know what we're wearing right now, do they?
Well, certainly not. Absolutely. Miss Jones, come on, you know, for goodness sake. Now, the row goes on about this wallpaper in Downing Street, which just bores me to death. You know, I couldn't care less. It's nothing political. I don't care who the Prime Minister is. I think they should have a decent pad to live in. You know, they're running the country 24 hours a day. Did you know that, because I saw this in a league table of spending, the total spend that Mrs. Thatcher's government spent on renovating the Downing Street flat for her was exactly £0. She wouldn't have any public money spent on it. The only expenditure was on a new ironing board, and Dennis Thatcher paid for that himself and brought it back in the car.
Yeah, no, that's completely what you would expect of Margaret Thatcher, isn't it? She would want to be above criticism for having spent anything from the public purse on herself. And that doesn't surprise me at all. What does surprise me is that Boris has been allowed to spend so much. And
well,
a lot of people seem to
route.
Think that's okay. Well, I know, because he's had a donation from somebody he didn't declare. But what I'm trying to say is that the fact that the bill was so high and that certain factions of people seem to think that that's okay.
Yeah, well, again, I don't really care, and I think the prime minister. I think the allowance is £30,000 over the course of your term of office, 5 years, and he and Carrie spent £58,000, you know, in the first couple of weeks. And I don't care about that. When you think of all the billions and billions of pounds that have had to be spent in this country to keep us going, it's a minuscule amount of money. But the one thing I was going to say was the row over wallpaper, right? And Keir Starmer made a hopeless fool of himself trying to be clever by posing with a picture of wallpaper from the John Lewis store, I think, you know, to say, oh, look, you know, Boris has been spending money on expensive wallpaper. I've never lived in a place with wallpaper. I can't understand how people are still going around putting wallpaper on their walls. Ever since I bought my first place or rented my first flat on my own, I've never lived in a place with wallpaper, because I've always tried to go for new build type places, which have lovely white walls inside. I don't know why anybody would put wallpaper on them. Have you been a wallpaper fan during your domestic life?
Not really, but when I was a child, wallpaper was a thing, and I lived in my family home, and I remember being taken to those shops where they had the great big books, sort of leather-bound books with pages of wallpaper, and you could choose which one you wanted.
Yeah, I remember those.
I remember we had a couple of them to bring home. You hold them up against the wall, you know, to go, oh, do I fancy that one, or would I like that in green instead? And I remember nicking pages out of those books to cover my school books with.
Because that used to be a thing.
We used to cover our school books with wallpapers.
That's right.
But no, I've never chosen wallpaper to hang in my homes or anything. I wouldn't do that. I don't like wallpaper.
No, I didn't realise wallpaper was still going. I don't go into homes now, I'm going to anybody's homes, but if you know what I mean, you know, they're not in offices. Why would you put wallpaper on nice white walls? That's what I can't kind of work out.
I think I know the reason. It's because in older places, the walls are not sort of smooth and flat.
No, that's true.
And so they would put lining paper and then coloured patterned wallpaper over the top to disguise the lumps and bumps.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the case. My mum always did the wallpapering in our house. I mean, the whole house was covered in wallpaper, you know. It was the whole house except for one room where we had wooden panels on the walls. And it was very nice. They were made of elm or something like that, you know what I mean? And battened to the walls and all that. But the wallpapering, my mum used to not only do the wallpapering in the halls and all that, she used to wallpaper the ceilings as well and then paint them. I mean, you know, she'd get two ladders in with a plank, and I used to fear terribly she was going to fall off. But she was very good at it, God rest her soul.
I think women did that kind of stuff in those days, because I remember my mother doing it as well,
really?
Strangely enough, yep.
Really?
And they had those great big brushes that they'd dip in a bucket of glue, do you remember? And then sort of wipe the glue across the wall and stuff.
I know, yeah, amazing. But anyway, there we go. I think George Osborne's family made a fortune out of wallpaper, didn't they?
Osborne and Little.
Is that it? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's the company, yeah.
Cool, amazing, eh?
Very posh wallpaper, that is.
But, yes, exactly.
Maybe not as posh enough for Boris as it's Lulu Little, isn't it? The one
that Lulu Little, that's right. Yeah, who's the interior designer. Yeah, that's right. I don't quite understand what an interior designer is, you know. You know, whenever I furnished a place, I furnished it because I put in there what I like. I don't understand what an interior designer is, do you?
Well, yeah, I do. It's people generally with more money than taste, and they've got no idea of how they should. Well, it's true. They don't know how they would like to present their interior to the world, because they're the sort of people that receive people and they want to give the right impression. So they consult an interior designer who comes around and tells them they should have this wall covering, this kind of furniture, these colours, these fabrics, whatever else. Yeah. Money for old rope, really, because I'm like you, I want to choose my own stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree. It is money for old rope. Now then, Ms. Jones, have you seen that piece in one of the papers that we read every day this week about a woman who wore a dress for 100 days?
Yes.
What's going on? Who in their right mind would wear an item of clothing for 100 consecutive days? That's 3.5 months.
It's taking a stance against disposable fashion. So the kind of garments that you would buy in Primark or Pradamark, as they call it, because a lot of those clothes end up in landfill sites, and it's a stance against that. Could you wear the same item of clothing for 3 months, basically? It's not quite as cut and dried as it seems, because this woman adapts the outfit. She wears the dress, but with a shirt one day, a cardigan the next, a pair of trousers the day after. So it's a little bit of a cheat, because it is sort of combinations of things. It's not at all the same as, say, you wearing the same suit for 100 days.
Yeah. No, I see that. And I know that women can mix and match their clothes and, you know, give them sort of different exciting uses and all that kind of stuff. But what about the very act of cleaning that particular item of clothing?
Well, it's got to be something that can go in the washing machine at night and be dry by the morning.
So
something, we used to call it drip dry, didn't we? Do you remember when we used to hang our clothes on a rack over the bath?
Those
days have gone, But now we all have central heating. We can all put something on a radiator overnight, whatever else. So I think, it's pretty easy to dry a man-made fabric overnight.
I
think it's
going to
be clean. Yes.
I'll take your word for it. I do hang shirts when I occasionally wash them because my housekeeper does all that for me. But during lockdown and all that, she didn't come for like 2-3 months, you know. So I learned how to wash shirts and hang them, they dry eventually. When we were all on the road, and you'll have had this, you know, the privations of being on the road, people think it's glamorous to go around the world following rock bands or go off covering wars or something like that. Some of the hotels I've stayed in, as I'm sure you have, were just hopeless. No facilities at all. And you had to wash your clothes overnight, every night, and hang them up to dry. And I found out how to get the creases out of a shirt. What you do is you run a very hot bath that's steaming, and then you hang the shirt over the bath, and then the steam rises, and all the creases drop out of the shirt. And then you hang it out the window, because you're usually in a hot country somewhere, and you've got a nice little ironed shirt.
If a seagull hasn't nicked it.
Well, if the seagull hasn't nicked it, quite right.
The telephone line that you've hung it on. I got dressed in so many hotel rooms and, you know, soaking wet socks the next day and damp pants and all the rest of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's what we resorted to in those days. It wasn't all glamour, was it?
No, but we were younger then, so we didn't regard it as a privation. We regarded it as very exciting, didn't we? And talking about one of those trips I was on, I see that yesterday commemorated the birth of Dame Margot Fonteyn. Okay, now I have never been into the ballet. Are you into the ballet, Miss Jones?
Absolutely love the ballet, and I've gone to Covent Garden many times over the years.
I had a girlfriend once who had very rich parents. They lived in the Bishop's Avenue in Hampstead, right? And she dragged me along to the ballet at the Royal Opera House? Would it be?
Yes, it is. It's the Royal Ballet, which is at, they call it Covent Garden. That's what it's referred to. The building itself is referred to as that, yes. But the Royal Ballet and the Royal Opera are there.
Yes. Well, I thought the music was very nice, right? And I like that, the Nutcracker Suite or whatever. But I didn't get the dancing bit. It just didn't appeal to me aesthetically as something which, you know, I mean, you know, when you're watching a game of football, for instance, you're watching poetry in motion if you're a football fan. But I didn't see any poetry in motion in the ballet. I couldn't quite understand, you know, what I was supposed to be watching. I couldn't understand what was being interpreted on stage. However, point of my story is that Dame Margot Fonteyn was apparently the greatest ever dancer, was about to retire when Rudolf Nureyev suddenly defected from Russia. He was on a visit to the West with the Moscow Ballet and suddenly said, I'm out, and off he went, ended up in London. And then Dame Margot Fonteyn extended her career by 4 or 5 years to dance with Nureyev. That must have been quite a scene, that, I suppose, for ballet fans.
Gosh, yeah, it was quite a bit more than 3 or 4 or 5 years, actually.
Oh, was it?
Yes, in 1961, she was 42 years old, and obviously considering retirement, because dancers do at that age. Ballet is one of those art forms that takes a tremendous toll on the body, and they can't do it forever. Their feet are destroyed because it's very complex, very difficult, and dancing on point just breaks your toes.
On your points. Yes.
So along comes this dashing Rudolf Nureyev, and she does a volte-face, and she then dances with him from his debut at the Royal Ballet in 62. They became an international sensation overnight, and they then danced for the best part of 20 years together. So she was into
really? 20 years?
Yes.
Wow.
And then do you remember her husband was shot? I think he was a Panamanian MP or a some sort of statesman or other.
Yeah.
And he was shot and he was paralyzed.
Yes.
And so she retired to Panama with him, where she nursed him. And then she very sadly died of ovarian cancer exactly 29 years after that debut in Giselle with Rudolf Nureyev.
Golly, that's amazing. You know the history of it, don't you? Yeah, that was a bit of a mystery about her husband getting shot, wasn't it? It was some sort of gangsterism or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. And they had a farm, didn't they? They had some sort of ranch back in Panama, cattle ranch, I think.
Yeah, no, I didn't know. Anyway, listen, the story goes on further. One of my claims to fame is that I was at Nureyev's bedside when he died, okay? Yes, I was, yes. What happened was, and it's all a bit of a mystery, this, but Nureyev had homes all over the world. He became very wealthy, obviously. And one of them was in St. Bart's, right? And we heard that Nureyev had got AIDS and that he was in France, but he was being flown to St. Bart's, where he had a holiday home, to die. And I got down there and I eventually found his holiday home. It was like a villa, you know, a big villa in St. Bart's. And I climbed over the wall and went in the back doors, which were open, like the windows. And Nureyev was there in bed.
You were breaking and entering.
No, I wasn't breaking and entering.
Man's home.
No, I walked through an open gate. And I walked.
You said you climbed over the wall.
Well, I did climb over the wall to get to the gate. That is true. but then I walked in, and I'm not joking, Nureyev was there. And I looked all this up years later because I thought, was that really Nureyev? And all the accounts of Nureyev's death say he died in hospital in Paris, but he didn't. I remember seeing the jet flying in from France that was carrying him. And then that flew into St. Martin's, which is one of the Caribbean islands. I think you know those islands pretty well. And St. Martin's is a French protectorate. And the plane came into St. Martin's. Then I had to find out where it was going. And then he was transported to St. Bart's, which, of course, is the celebrity island, isn't it, in the Caribbean?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So did you actually witness his death?
Well, I think he was already dead. Because he was lying in bed and...
He died of shock at the sight of you.
Well, he would have done if he'd have seen me, yeah. But no, quite seriously, I it was amazing. And then people came into the room and they were all confused. They didn't know who I was, you know, and I said, you know, I didn't tell them who I was. I just... There were a lot of people around and walking in
did
and out.
Did you make your excuses and leave?
Well, I did eventually, but, you know, I've always claimed to have had the... to have heard Nureyev's last words.
And you know, what were they?
Well, I can't reveal that because
they were in Russian.
Russian or French or something like that. But it was the strangest experience I've ever come across because I couldn't believe that I was looking at world famous dancing. I'm a very, very famous man lying on
slipping away.
Slipping
his
yeah.
mortal coil. Did you yeah. write about this at the time?
Oh, of course I did. I mean, you know, I it was exclusive and, you know, Mike Parry, Caribbean, Rudolf Nureyev's last words, you know, and the desperate battle to save him, the journey from France to the Caribbean, all that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, yeah. I got all the detail in. And
fantastic.
I felt a bit rotten about it, but I didn't mean to invade his privacy so late in his life, really.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things of being in the wrong place at the right time, isn't it?
But, yeah, no.
Yeah, no, it was rumoured for years that Nureyev had a long-standing affair with Freddie Mercury.
Oh, really? How interesting. And was there any substance to that, do you think?
Who knows? Yeah. I investigated it for a couple of my books, actually. And some people were adamant that it was true. Others said, well, no, they never actually crossed paths. But I know for a fact that they drank in the same pub in West London where Freddie lived.
Right.
Might have been was there a pub called the Cool Hern or something in... sort of that bit of West Kensington, yeah. You know, where all the gay pubs were.
Yeah, I don't actually. It's not part of the world that I go to a lot. I think Piers lives around there, doesn't he? Piers Morgan. So he may well...
He lives a bit closer to Harrods.
One, yes,
one
he
of
does, actually.
Squares
yeah.
opposite Harrods, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Well, he'd probably know about it. The other funny thing is that the other guy... Because, I mean, you've got to remember, this is in the 80s, an era... No, it's the early 90s, I'm sorry. And it's an era when still there was so much horror and, you know, ignorance about AIDS. Nobody knew what it was about. And Rock Hudson also died of AIDS, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And, who was the... Oh, Liberace, the pianist.
Liberace did as well, did he? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was one of the first victims. There was ignorance and there was fear. And there was a scenario. So, you know, Debrett's Peerage, the sort of Bible of posh people and high achievers. There was even a situation where if there was a member of your family who had contracted or died of AIDS, your family would be deleted from that volume. Such was the shame attached to it because it was in those days described as a gay plague. People didn't know enough about the disease.
Didn't know anything about it.
The fact that it could attack any kind of people. It was nothing to do with people's sexual persuasion.
Yeah. I was going to say, I remember in the early days, this would be in the 80s now, when nobody knew what AIDS was. I mean, people were walking into banks and handing the cashier a note saying, give me all your money or I'll breathe on you. I've got AIDS. There was so much ignorance about it, you know, so much fear. People would like faint and panic and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, there we are.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, so you are listening to Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Portmeister, and, of course, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. And, Leslie Ann, you're rather busy at the moment. You've got a writing project on. Are you going to tell us what it's all about?
Well, I can't yet because it hasn't been announced by the publisher. But, I'm running around doing interviews for the new book, which will come out in July 2022.
Really? Well, that's great. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're keeping busy, and I look forward to another fantastic tome, if that's the right word, of some rock legend or other. Now, talking about legends, and this lady is a legend, though she's not a rock star, Naomi Campbell, at the age of 50, it has been revealed she has had a baby. Some people are speculating by surrogacy, because there were pictures of her just a month or so ago showing her to be extremely slim with the figure that she's world famous for. I wish her the very best of luck in the future, you know, and it's great news for her if she's been wanting a baby all these years. The thing I've mentioned this to you for, apart from the fact it's quite an interesting story, is that the piece I read listed Naomi Campbell's boyfriends over the years, you know, kind of sort of speculating whether one of them could be the father. And I have to say, Naomi Campbell's been out with almost every famous person, every famous male, you know, actor or sportsman or whatever that I've can remember over the last 25 years. And doesn't make her a bad person. Yeah. I'm just saying that, you know, she's obviously been at the centre of a huge social network.
Yeah, she's put it about a bit, I think is the phrase, hasn't she? I remember covering her engagement to Adam Clayton of U2. Yes. And that was back in the 90s. Mm. I don't know what went wrong there, but since then there's been Sylvester Stallone, Mike Tyson, Flavio Briatore, the racing driver manager, the grime artist Skepta, Hassan Jamil, who's a big Saudi businessman, Sean Diddy Combs, Liam Payne. I mean, you name it, really. Yeah. What is wrong with this woman that she can't meet a guy, settle down and make a go of it? It does make you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, isn't that being a bit harsh, isn't it? Because of her worldwide fame, that very few men would find it easy to, you know, live alongside her. I mean, she's almost goddess-like, isn't she, her presence anywhere?
She's a very difficult person. I wrote a book about her back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, it was called...
Fascinating.
No, I can't remember what it's called now. And I was living at the time down in Kent, and I had my youngest daughter was about 3, and she was going to a local nursery. And her mother, Valerie Campbell, got wind of the fact that I was researching a book. She left a message on my answering machine telling me to look under my Suzuki Jeep when I went out that afternoon to pick up my little girl from nursery. And it was a bit threatening, actually. And they didn't like at all the idea that I was writing a book about Naomi, which was published. They didn't understand that... anyone can write a book about anybody at all with any kind of content as long as it's true. Sure. So I didn't really understand that story in the papers last week about Kate Winslet having terrorized an author into withdrawing from a publishing deal to write a book about her, because actually nobody has the right to do that.
Well, I totally agree with you. And that's, that is the way the law goes and behaviour goes. But some people think that they exercise so much influence because of their fame that they can frighten people into stopping doing things, don't they?
They do. But, I mean, it makes you wonder what, in that case, do they have to hide?
Yeah.
Well, you know, she's a difficult one, Naomi Campbell. She's she's always thrown her weight around a bit.
Yeah.
She's always at the center of some controversy. Do you remember the Blood Diamonds scandal?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that. Yeah. I also remember.
Yeah.
I remember hasn't she been accused of throwing phones at people and, you know, treating assistants very badly? And I've read stories, I don't know how true they are, of her getting on aeroplanes and being rather difficult in the first class compartment. But surely, when you're as famous as Naomi Campbell and you go to as many open public events as Naomi Campbell, there's always going to be somebody who's got a gripe with you and moaning and whinging and saying, oh, she's so arrogant and she doesn't treat people properly. Think of the number of people who she has to deal with every day in her life as a model and all the business things she's in. I do think if you're in the public eye, you are, you know, you come under such examination, some things are bound to go wrong.
Oh, it's terribly sad, isn't it? Being rich and famous and having anything you want. She did actually do some community service on the streets of New York, cleaning up. Do you remember those amazing pictures of her in a hazmat suit, sort of with a bucket and mop?
Yes.
Because she belted somebody with a mobile phone. That's quite right. And she was done for it.
Yeah.
She's a tricky character. I'm glad she's got a baby because she always wanted a family and to settle down. It does appear that she's used a surrogate. Nothing wrong with that. But now she has this nice little baby and hopefully she'll calm down a bit.
Yeah, maybe. When these people get protective about people writing books about them, is it because they see a late payday in their career of their own autobiography and they don't want anything in the way of that?
That's very possible. Yeah, that's a good argument. I mean, look, it could detract from their own publication.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, a third person biography is never going to stand up to what somebody has to say for themselves.
Yeah.
So in theory, it shouldn't have any effect on it at all. And in some cases, it can enhance.
Yeah.
You know, you sort of paved the way with the third person version. Now, you know, here it is from the horse's mouth.
I suppose there's always the chance, so you quite rightly mentioned Kate Winslet. I read that story that she got uppity about somebody writing a book about it. You know, maybe there's a secret father in the background. John Lennon, for instance, you know, is the perfect example, isn't he, of, you know, a father who came out from under the stone when he got famous. Maybe if some researcher does research on famous people, they find things like that, and the person concerned doesn't want that revealed. And, you know, whilst I'm on the side of authors like yourselves and the freedom to write anything you want, I can understand why some people would get twitchy about it.
I actually found Naomi Campbell's father.
Really?
Yeah. Who was, how can we put this delicately? He was serving time for rape.
Oh, golly. That's not good. Mm. In this country or?
Yes. Oh. Yes, in this country.
Golly.
But I found, so I discovered where his mother was living and I went round to see her. Knocked on the door, and you know how you do, you've done plenty of this. You peer through the window of the sitting room, and on the sideboard there were framed pictures of Naomi. So there was obviously a connection.
Yeah.
And I put it to this lady that she was Naomi's grandmother.
Yeah.
She chased me down the road with a laundry basket.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the problem sometimes. That's I always hated door knocks like that because you never knew what sort of response you were going to get from the person opening the door. Some people accepted that, you know, you were going to be paying a tribute to somebody's life if they died or something like that. Others got very, very angry if you're asking difficult questions. I totally agree.
Yeah, it was quite a funny scene because I managed to get in the car and lock the door.
Yeah.
And there was this lady belting the window of my car with this laundry basket. It's quite funny. It was like a scene out of John Cleese.
Yeah, right, yeah. But it's not funny at the time, is it? Because it can get quite threatening.
I'm terrified.
Yeah, exactly. And particularly if a couple of the neighbours join in and think, oh, you know, help her out here, whatever.
Yeah, let's give her a good kicking.
Talking about women, Ms. Jones, I am delighted to see that a lady called, what's her name here? Her name is Darcy Richards. She's 5'2" tall and she's chosen to become a bricklayer and she's now got a sort of, you know, a social media type site expounding the virtues of bricklaying, woman and all that. And she's become very successful. And I think it's a great story. I think opportunities like that should be open to many, many more youngsters, including women.
Well, this is the little girl in Norfolk, isn't it?
Yes.
She's got 98,000 followers on TikTok. Mm. And she puts up tutorials of bricklaying and funny moments that happen on building sites and that kind of thing. She's demonstrating that construction is no longer a man's world.
Yes.
And that women are welcome into that job. Why not?
Yep.
And she's a good role model.
Yeah, I think she's a great role model. I've been saying for years, and I think I've had this conversation with you, that to turn every higher education institution into a university, which is what we did in the sort of, you know, the sort of Blair years or even earlier, was a total mistake. Because I remember institutions which used to be called technical colleges, where people were taught plumbing and bricklaying and carpentry and electricians and all that kind of stuff. They suddenly became polytechnics. And then 2 years later, they became universities. And we've got far too many universities in this country. We push out far too many students who then get jobs for which they're massively overqualified. And I would like to see a return to the technical trades. And I hope that this young lady, who's 5'2", as I say, and she's got a TikTok site, hasn't she? I'm not sure about TikTok.
That's what I just said. Yeah, you weren't listening again, were you?
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Jones, you know. And I hope it inspires lots more people to do it.
Yeah, vocational colleges are still about, so you can still go and learn a particular practical skill.
Yeah.
I've got a great friend, Robert, who was head of PE at one of the London independent schools.
Oh, yes.
Did that job for about 20 years, got really fed up with it. And I said, what really caused your downfall? And he said, I couldn't stand parents. He said, the kids were great, but I just couldn't stand the parents getting on my case all the time.
Yeah.
So he quit and he retrained as a plumber. And he's now a very successful plumber in London and a very good one at that. So, you know, the boundaries are falling away. There's no longer this sense that to do to be a manual labourer of some kind, because quite a lot of skill is involved in these things, such as bricklaying and plumbing and so on. Being an electrician, you need to know what you're plugging into and all that kind of stuff. Things that you and I will never know anything about.
Yeah.
But they are skills that need to be learned, that need to be taught and need to be handed on. So I'm all for this kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You know, I think you've got to give people more opportunities to get about. How do you get on with your neighbours, Ms. Jones? I've seen this survey, OK? The perfect neighbour always says hello and signs for deliveries, a survey reveals. Great people next door also keep an eye on your home when you're away. Fixing garden fences quickly and sharing homegrown produce are also in the top 30 list of best features, says this survey done by a wine delivery service called Barefoot Wine. I've never had neighbours like that.
I've always had neighbours like that.
Really?
I was brought up to be friendly with the neighbours. My mother was always very friendly with the people next door, both sides, wherever we lived as children. And even we would refer to the next door ladies as auntie.
Yes.
You know, auntie Iris and this kind of thing.
Yes.
Whenever I move into a new place, I always introduce myself to myself, even to the neighbours.
Yeah.
And I do take in parcels. They do take in mine.
Yeah.
My mother's neighbour, where she lives, she's lived in the same house for 42 years.
Yeah.
The lady next door to her cooks her a dinner every now and again and brings it round on a plate.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Mm. I think it's in our best interest, isn't it, to be friendly? Because you've got to see these people all the time. Mm. You don't want to fall out with the person who lives next door. And then you have all that embarrassment when you go out to get in your car and they might be out there doing the garden and stuff. You've got to be friendly.
Yeah.
You've got to keep it on an even keel.
Yeah. Oh, no, I kind of agree with all of that. And you're right about, you know, when we were kids, we had neighbours next door. But that went badly wrong because they had to go away and they had an Alsatian dog and they wanted to leave the dog with us. And, you know, we were a family with three little kids, me and my two sisters. We're only a year apart from each other. And my mum was terrified of having this dog in the house because she thought the dog might attack us, you know, but they had to go off somewhere. I don't know what it was. I think it was a, you know, a family bereavement or something. They couldn't take the dog and we took it, but it was horrendous. My mum wanted the dog locked up in the shed all the time, you know. It was a terrible thing. Apart from that, they're good. No, what I meant was, I meant personally, I didn't mean from childhood days when I think we were in a different era, but I've lived most of my life in apartments or flats. I have had houses, but I've always found a house too big for me. I bought a couple of townhouses, and I don't know why I wanted three floors. You know what I mean? I suppose you always think, oh, well, one of these days, you know, might shack up with somebody or get married or something like that. But when you live in an apartment, as you know, you don't really ever get to know a neighbour.
Well, yes, you do, because you meet sometimes if you go down to get your mail or whatever. I remember once putting a little note under my two sort of neighbouring flats just to say, having a bit of a party at the weekend. Hope it doesn't disturb you, but if it does, please give me a knock. And one of them actually knocked on my door and handed me a bottle of champagne and said, this is for your party. And I said, oh, you know, and then you feel guilty because you haven't invited them.
Yeah.
But you think, well, don't actually know them, and but just being polite because don't want to disturb them at the weekend. It's a thin line, isn't it? It's difficult to know what to do, really.
Yeah, no, it is. Now, Ms. Jones, I'm going to give you the opportunity to give us your best impression, please, of Janet Street Porter, woman Paris Chancellor Porter, after she accused her brother Boris. Rachel Johnson is on Loose Women, apparently. So is Janet Street Porter. And
that is an absolutely terrible impersonation.
Yeah, yeah. And Janet Street Porter accused Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, and Rachel Johnson's brother, of course, of double standards. He's never tried to pretend he's anything else than who he is and all this kind of stuff. And Rachel got quite angry and said, Janet, listen, you wouldn't ask him on Loose Women to talk about me, so I'm not talking about him. So she actually was quite good about that. But imagine Janet getting a bit put out with her teeth sticking out and saying, yeah, what's wrong with you then?
Now, that's a bit teethist, isn't it?
Well,
but what Janet actually said was, your brother has, to put it mildly, an incredibly colourful private life that preceded her current partner, and yet somehow he manages to sail through, and he's one of these double standard types. And it does make me very cross. Don't you feel cross as well? Mm. And, of course, Rachel put her in her place.
That was a brilliant impersonation, Miss Jones.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to put you on the stage and we do Janet Street Porter. We'd have to wear a red wig, and without being teethist, we'd have to give you a pair of false teeth, because
she dyes her own hair, you know.
Yeah, I know she dyes her own hair, yeah. But
just in case you didn't know that.
Her protruding teeth are, in fact, a trademark of hers, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. That's all part of her image. And do you remember when spitting image was big? Wasn't that back in the 80s?
Yes.
I tried to bring it back, but it didn't really work.
Yes.
But she was a stalwart character on that, wasn't she?
She was, yeah. No, absolutely. Right. OK, Miss Jones, well, thank you very much indeed. Another great romp through life, so to speak. But, of course, in the family show way, obviously. I'm not talking about anything else. And you know, hope you have a great busy day and a couple of days ahead of you, Miss Jones. We'll be back with the audience in a couple of days' time. Until then, folks, please stay safe. And remember, we're all heading towards total freedom. I remember seeing the jet flying in from France that was carrying him. And that flew into St. Martin's, which is one of the Caribbean islands. I think you know those islands pretty well. And St. Martin's is a French protectorate. The plane came into St. Martin's. Then I had to find out where it was going. And then he was transported to St. Bart's, which, of course, is the celebrity island, isn't it, in the Caribbean?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So did you actually witness his death?
Well, I think he was already dead. Because he was lying in bed and...
He died of shock at the sight of you.
Well, he would have done if he'd have seen me, yeah. But no, quite seriously, I it was amazing. And then people came into the room and they were all confused. They didn't know who I was, you know, and I said, you know, I didn't tell them who I was. There were a lot of people around and walking in
did
and out.
Did you make your excuses and leave?
Well, I did eventually, but, you know, I've always claimed to have had to have heard Nureyev's last words.
And you know, what were they?
Well, I can't reveal that because...
they were in Russian.
Janet Street Porter, woman Paris Chancellor Porter, after she accused her brother Boris. Rachel Johnson is on Loose Women, apparently. So is Janet Street Porter. And
that is an absolutely terrible impersonation. We have our share of weirdos and eccentrics now, don't we?
Yeah, we do. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Nobody wants to know what we're wearing right now, do they?
Well, certainly not. Absolutely. Miss Jones, come on, you know, for goodness sake.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.